This podcast is proudly produced by Made for Media and powered by Fan Plus.
I love the Olympic Games. I love what it represents.
Out of court! They have won the gold medal!
Everyone tries to be the best athlete they can be and the best in the world at any given time.
Welcome to On My Day. I'm Nat Cook. Today we're speaking with water polo sensational legend, Bronwyn Knox. Welcome, Bronwyn.
Thanks, Nat. Good to be here.
Well, good to be here. It's a year away from when it was supposed to happen. Like, today was the day your water polo final was supposed to happen, and now you've got to wait 12 months. So we have a unique opportunity to talk about the day, like, in your dreams, which is, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yep.
I want to go to, you are very esteemed in the water polo space. Tokyo will be your fourth Olympics, and you've already got two bronze medals. So talk to me about why water polo and how you've continued to go all this time.
So a light topic to start.
Yes, we'll start it, ease it in.
Why water polo? I think, I started off as a swimmer. I competed at states and all that sort of stuff when I was growing up. I trained 10 times a week. And at some point, a friend of mine from high school just said, can you fill in this weekend? We've got a water polo game. I was like, what's water polo? I've never heard of that sport. And she's like, don't worry, you're a swimmer, you'll pick it up. And I went down and had no idea what was going on. They just said, follow whichever way the referee is pointing, swim that way. So I did. and I loved it. And so this was about a month out from the Sydney 2000 Olympics. My mum was from Sydney, so we ended up driving down to watch the Olympics and go to whatever we could with my whole family. There's five of us, or five kids plus two adults.
So you got a bus?
Yep.
You drove down the bus?
Yeah, drove down in a bus, stayed at my grandparents' place. I'm sure they loved it. And then the Aussie women made, it was their first time ever competing at the Olympics, with water polo being one of the longest running team sports. Mm. However, women were only invited to play in Sydney for the first time. And then they made the gold medal match and Mum was like, do you want to go? You've played a couple of games. And I was like, yeah, sure. Let's see if we can get tickets. Sat on the phone, I think only about 5 minutes before I got through and got tickets, and I was like, guess we're going. And I just remember never sitting down the whole game. I was just enthralled by it. Just had such grace and beauty and speed and agility and strength. And I just thought, that's what I want to do.
How old were you then?
14.
Okay.
Went back, signed up for the club to start training, and within a couple of weeks I realised that one of the girls who won the gold medal was actually a part of that club. So I got to meet her, which was fantastic.
Who was that?
Naomi McCarthy.
Uh-huh. Now Castle.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty much what kicked it off, but it wasn't until I was about 16 that I actually started training water polo. Like, I did once a week with swimming on top, and then it just got too much with year 11 and 12, and I was, you know, swimming in the morning, swimming in the afternoon, then water polo training in school somewhere in the middle.
So who said you had to pick, your mum or your dad, or you worked that out yourself?
It's a bit of both. When I started falling asleep in class and having to do my homework on the train and, you know, one of five kids, both my parents worked. I just couldn't physically move around Brisbane as easily. So I had to choose, and because I had to find my own way there and transport and all that sort of stuff, I enjoyed water polo a lot more. It was, you could chat while you were doing it. There was a team sport. It forced you to be social. I was pretty introverted as a kid, pretty shy, so it forced me out of my shell a little bit. And, yeah, just found I had a bigger career progression in water polo than I did as a swimmer, because I'd always wanted to be an Olympian ever since I was probably grade one at school and an Olympian came and visited. I was like, oh, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to go do. So it was always on something I was aspiring to my whole career, and just sort of thought I had a better chance. I enjoyed it a lot more, and I was sort of going places really quickly without actually knowing the rules of the sport.
And so much more fun when you throw a ball in, I guess, than
yes.
swimming up and down a black line.
Yeah.
I got that from personal experience. And water polo, ironically, was the only sport my mum didn't let me play, because I played everything else And I remember clearly the day I said, "Mum, can I try water polo?" She said, "No." And so I never really got there. But a side note on that, Bron, that water polo game in 2000 was the night before Kerry and I won our gold medal in the beach volleyball. So it's very dear to me too, with 21 seconds to go or 13 seconds. What was it?
Look, it was about 13 or the last 4 seconds. They got a timeout and...
And our girls scored against the US, and it was, like I said, the night before we won. So it was a real big adrenaline rush for me, and water polo sits very fondly in my heart. So from there then, you decide to take on water polo. How do you progress through the club and the country and get picked, and how many in squads, and is that an easy process?
Yeah, so there was... you know, your Med East, your school sport, there was state competitions. And I always I made some teams, but I was always sort of on the reserves, and then the next year I'd make it and the next year I'd be a reserve. So I was always, I was never walked into any team. It was always, well, how can I get better? How can I get better to make this team? And then, like, I was working hard, and my goal was to make the under 20 state team to compete at nationals. And my first time I tried out, I was on the reserves. But then there were bushfires in Canberra when nationals were supposed to be on, so they delayed it by 6 months, which meant that some of the girls had to drop out, and that gave me an option in. Mm-hmm. And it was my first real big nationals in a big age group that had a lot on the line, because they had national teams getting selected out of there and squads. And I started on the bench, and by the end of the tournament, I was one of the main players in the water, and I scored my first bounce shot against one of the national goalies. And I was like, I can't believe I threw that. Like, that's amazing. Usually they just stop flat. So it was sort of, it gave me an idea about what I could achieve. And then, after that, it sort of became a habit of just continually working and working and pushing. And what was the next goal? What was the next thing? So it sort of, I think having those disappointments early set me up to be the athlete I am, by how can I get better and how can I work towards a goal.
And then how do you get picked in an Olympic team? Your first Olympics was when?
Beijing 2008. Uh-huh.
Come away with a bronze medal.
Yes, yeah.
Is that exciting?
It was a bit of a roller coaster ride, because you lose your semi-final, which sucks.
I hear you.
I think you came in to speak to us.
To talk about that?
Yep. And then you've got to back up 2 days later, so you've been sitting on it almost for 48 hours before you've got to compete. And we went into extra time, and then we went into a penalty shootout, so it was super high pressure, and it was a roller coaster of emotions. I don't even remember much about the Olympics aside from the gold, bronze medal game, and what I was thinking and feeling at that time. But yeah, it was unbelievable experience. It's sort of becomes addictive, that adrenaline rush and that competing at that high stakes and high stage.
Which is why, you know, thinking of a fourth Olympics, and now by the sound of it, you're used to events being moved, the Canberra event that got moved 6 months. So now clearly in 2020, in this COVID time where it's moved to Tokyo 2021, you know, I imagine with your fourth Olympics, you're thinking of retiring, you've got other parts of your life. Talk us through what this last 2 months has been like for you.
It's been tough at times. Definitely when it got announced, you sort of expected it, but it still hit you pretty hard. And then you move on to, well, how is it going to affect me? And I was talking to my coach a couple of weeks ago, and this is the longest break I've ever had in my entire life out of the water. Like, even I took a year off after the Rio Olympics, I still swam just to keep some sort of fitness twice a week for fun. Like, because it's where I get solidify all my thoughts and ideas, and a bit of meditation in that swimming, and just my happy place, I suppose you'd call it. It's like 10 weeks out of the water. I'm not young anymore. I'm 34 years old and going to be 35, and I've got to work all the way back up from zero to Olympic fit, which is really tough, and I'm already carrying a number of different stresses on my body, and it's going to be a real slow progression back, and then you add in people being added into the squad to get the best team possible. So you got more competition. You've got girls who are younger, maturing into their playing style. So it's a lot of different things going on, and trying to work through all that and wade through that. And then you've got the external pressures of finances. Can I afford to go again? Which, you know, you never want to base your career on, can I afford to do it, or do I have to move on?
Yeah, so clearly water polo is not one of the high-profile, highly paid sports. So how have you managed to keep going for such a long time? Most people in women's sports stop because of money, lack of money, or they want to have children or get on with their career. So how have you maintained to be a four-time water polo Olympian in Tokyo? How have you maintained that?
Well, I think it helped in that I didn't really know what I wanted to do, because I wanted to be an Olympian and that was my driving force. I didn't know what there was second to that. So I sort of focused on education as a really strong point, because I knew I couldn't work as much, or the jobs I did gave me flexibility to move around and travel and train. So I knew I had to explore education as a way of, well, what do I want to do when I do finish? So I've sort of refocused my energy into educating myself and working out what I am passionate about.
So ironically, while you're out of the water and Tokyo's another 12 months away, something else in your life as important as an Olympic gold medal is happening. Talk us through that.
I have just finished my law degree and I've just finished my practicing certificate, which has been a long time coming. And I've applied to the Supreme Court to get admitted as a legal practitioner, and it's a whole involved process. You have to disclose everything that would make you an unsuitable candidate. And that takes...
Like parking tickets and speeding fines?
Parking tickets, speeding fines, everything. You've got to sort of do a police check on yourself. You've got to disclose anything, academic misconduct or fraud or any way you've disregarded the rule of law or the processes or procedures and being dishonest, things that sort of weigh against your character.
What about doing 10 laps instead of 12 in the pool? Does that count?
I don't know.
You know, I can imagine you'd always swim more than that, but, for me, I was always trying to find a way to cut corners at training, because after 20 years it was way too much.
Yeah, I haven't gone down that avenue. Hopefully not, because I think they'd get me on a few.
So the law degree, does it feel as special as being an Olympian?
I don't know as special yet. I think that'll come when I look back on how much effort, like I was training full-time, working full-time and studying full-time and trying to balance that all. I had zero social life. Like my weekends were Saturday and Sunday. I spent studying from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on those 2 days just to get everything in. I think looking back, it'll weigh a lot more, but at the moment there's such a priority on finishing off my sporting career as well as I possibly can and get to the level I want to be and perform the way I want to perform. I think that's sort of the main priority. This is still working in the background and I'm still really proud of it, but I think once the Olympics are done and that sort of dust settles, I think I'll have a moment of going, oh, wow, can't believe I've done all of this at the same time together.
Pretty awesome. What does it mean to you to be an Olympian?
Just the easy questions. it's hard to put into words. I think there's so much that goes into being an Olympian, let alone all the training and all that sort of stuff. I think the values behind it are so incredibly important, and the Olympics are based on fair and inclusive, and all of those wonderful things that we love about sport. It makes an even playing field for everyone, no matter who you are or where you come from. When you hit that pitch, you're the same, and it's a battle of the fittest, let's say, and whoever comes out at the end or the smartest or whatever it might be, it's a good equaliser. Sport is, and I think it was only in my year off that I really recognised what it meant to be an Olympian, because you chat to young kids doing a lot of grassroots work and you see their admiration and their wonder in their eyes, like, wow, it actually is really special what I've done, even if it's not, you know, three Olympic gold medals at three Olympic Games, it's still like such a amazing achievement, and to see that reflected in someone else's eyes is incredible.
Mm. And to talk to you today is about, we use visualization as athletes. I'm sure the water polo team does. Yep. It must be challenging when there's how many in the pool at once? Five?
Six and a goalie.
So seven?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Five would be too much swimming. So six and a goalie, you've got seven on the team. To have you all thinking the same thing at the same time, today is about your day. So on my day, I believed I could beat anyone. Do you feel that way?
Oh, yeah. I think when there's a special bond you form as a team, whether or not you're friends, you have mutual respect for each other, and you've spent the hours, you know everyone's gone through these grueling training sessions to get there, and you just look in your teammates' eyes and you know that no one can beat us today. We are unbreakable.
So today's that day. You're going for the gold medal in Tokyo. It was supposed to be today. So talk us through you on your day winning. You've got a bronze from Beijing. You got a bronze from London. Talk us through a gold in Tokyo.
Oh, well, most days in the Olympics are the same for us. Like, we get up at relatively the same time. We usually do a morning training session just to freshen up a little bit. And then it just becomes habit. We just do the same thing. We get dressed. We walk out together as a team. We get on the bus as a team. We arrive at the venue as a team. We get changed in the change rooms together. We hang out there for a bit, listen to music. Some people dance. Some people chat.
I was going to say, are they all are they all different in how they approach what they do? Like, do some like to be quiet and you know they do, so you stay away from them?
Yes, yeah. I'm one of those. I like to be quiet. I like to listen to some music. I usually play a few mind games to just get my mind thinking, usually on my phone. Others like to jump around, be really active and, you know, have a bit of fun with a couple of the other girls. But then we all hit the pool together. We warm up the same way we do for every single game. Nothing changes. Nothing's out of the ordinary. Sometimes for our opponents, we'll be more specific to how we warm up, but just depends on who you get on the day. And then the best part about any competition is you all get out of the pool and you sit in one tiny little room with the other team facing each other and wait for 15 minutes, maybe 20.
Is your little cap on at that point, or is that?
No, they don't allow the cap on because it detracts from the look. So cap off, robe on, and you just sit there looking directly at your opposition about a metre apart,
and
waiting.
What's that for?
It's like a marshalling area. I was like, don't understand. We don't really want to look at each other, you know, just before we go out and we have to play against them.
So is it unnerving? Do you talk to them? Do you talk side by side, or are you all in silence? Like, what?
Depends. Sometimes it's really different. You sort of, you know, you're like, do I be really confident and really relaxed, or do I be really serious? Like, what are they reading into it? You start like getting into your own head and thinking about these things. You're like, stop thinking about this. Doesn't matter. Other people will sit there and go, okay, these are our tactics. This is what we're going to do. We're going to come out hard. We're going to push our counters. We're going to defend.
This is all in your head, though.
Yeah.
You're not telling them what you're going to do.
We don't talk to them about it. So it's all in our head. Sometimes we'll chat. Some of the girls, we have little games we play, little, not superstitions, but just something to, like, get people out of their heads. And
do you have a superstition?
No, I don't really like them, but I like something I can control, and so I always start with three laps freestyle, one lap breaststroke in the warm-up, just to the switch for, say, it's game time.
How do you actually know it's game time? So when you're this gold medal match, who would you like to play against in the gold medal match?
Oh, I don't care. Anyone. Okay. Bring on anyone.
Bring on anyone. Great.
Doesn't matter.
So then when you dive in the pool, you all dive in together.
Yes, all dive in together.
And what goes as you hit the pool, gold medal match, which you haven't been in yet.
Nope.
But this is happening today in Tokyo, right? This is our visualization, our manifestation, our dream time. What's going to go through your head as you hit the water?
As I hit the water, I'll usually stay under for a bit just to it's like a centering, so just center, breathe all the air out, come up and go, all right, what am I doing? What's my task? Whatever it might be.
And what is your job on the team? Are you a goal scorer? Are you a defender? Are you a hitman?
Good question. A bit of a mixture. Uh-huh. I used to be a defender and now I've sort of switched to the opposite. So I'm more of an attacker where I'm the center and everyone works around me. I just create a lot of attention and hope to draw everyone else's attention to me while other people do all the work.
Awesome. That's the wisdom. Yeah. That's the wisdom of the four-time Olympian. I want to hear about the underwater antics. Like,
okay.
You have to do you've done egg beater kick for nearly 20 years of your life. Yeah. How often have you been kicked and corked and wedgied and all those things?
Oh, God. Too many to count. One of the worst things is you get scratches. Just your skin gets a bit soft no matter how you cut your nails. You go one way, someone pulls you the other. Something's got to give, and generally you get scratches. So I've got scars on my arms and chest and back and all sorts of things.
How much can you get away with before that? What's the rule before you should be the whistle blown?
Generally, if you're holding the ball, anything goes, but attacking the head.
Okay.
So if you're holding the ball, you can pull someone as much as you like, as long as you're not pulling on their head or hitting their head. If you let go of the ball, it's automatically a free pass.
Okay, wow. So we're back to the gold medal. I'm in there with you. So I'm on the sideline now in Tokyo and I'm standing up because I can't sit down. This is gold medal for our Aussie water polo stingers, first time other than Sydney. And we've got a minute to go. The game's drawn. What happens?
Tough question. I think at that stage, I draw on the team. You look in everyone's eyes and you know that you're not just doing it for yourself, but you're doing it for the team. You've done it 100 times in training, you've trained it. You can't set any sort of move or play because you don't know what your opposition are going to do. You can't plan for what they're going to do.
So you don't have names like in basketball where they rotate that we have coverage or anything?
We do, but they're reliant on what the opposition do. So if they press, we're going to do this. If they zone, we're going to do this.
So it's all a gut feel or a sense. Yep. So could it be one player that takes over at that time and just...
Yep.
Yeah.
I've been in games where the coach has called one play and then we hit the water and the whistle goes and you're like, nah, it's not going to work. They're not doing it. You've got two defenders back in goals instead of out on the wings. So you're like, we've got to switch it up. So it's a moving feast. Everything sort of changes in an instant. So that's why those connections between players are so important. And reading body language in the water going, oh, they're not on for the shot. I know we're playing for that, but they've got two people on them. They're in the worst position possible. We've got to switch it up.
So you got to think about all that too.
Yeah, it sort of becomes instinct. Mm. You sort of rely on your gut feel of the game. You can feel how it's going to go before it happens.
So you're on that. You're in the zone. You've got the instinct happening. You're in the position with 3 seconds to go. I can see you rise out of the water with the ball back behind your head. Where are you shooting it?
I like to think I just look for free net.
Uh-huh. So wherever the goalie's not.
I don't look at the goalie. I don't look at the goals. I just look for free space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it goes in, Bron.
Yep.
What are we going to see from this? Is like the clock's gone down. It's exactly the way the Sydney 2000 games finished. What's the team do? What do you do at this point?
To be honest, I think I would just swim back and wait to make sure they've called the game off. I don't like to celebrate anything until the game is done because you never know. It's usually so noisy you can't hear anything. You just go into autopilot. You're like, what's my next role?
And what is that? So the referee calls the game to a hole, to a finish. What does that look like? Is there a noise you hear or a sound?
Usually it's a really long whistle. Mm-hmm. It's got a general tone to it. You'd see the bench jump up on their feet. Probably someone's in the air. Someone's catching someone in the water.
Are they allowed to jump in?
Yep, they'll be jumping in at some point. They'll be pushing the coach in. You've got the goalie probably swimming down. You've got people holding on to everyone and you're like trying not to drown, but you're celebrating at the same time. And it's just I think the team just comes together in that moment and you just sort of feel that energy go to the next level.
How cool would that be to finish your career in that space? So that's what you dream about every night?
No.
So what do you dream about every night?
I dream about what my perfect Olympic campaign would be, what I want to achieve and how I want to play. And I think the end result will take care of itself, because if I play like that, no one can beat me. So for me, it's what does the most consistent, the highest level, what does that look like? What do I need to do day in, day out to achieve that? So cool. I think you take care of that. You know, you can't control the referees, you can't control your opposition, but you can prepare yourself as best as you possibly can. And whatever happens on the day happens, but if you do that and nothing that comes at you will be a surprise. Everything will just be like, oh, they're doing that, I'll do this.
Awesome. So we have a little tradition on my day.
Okay.
Is to hand you the magic soap, which is the Palmolive Gold soap for you to take and wash yourself with. It won't last 8 months, so you'll need to get another one.
It's all right. Chlorine every day.
Chlorine, get rid of the soap. Yeah. So that's for you to, I know you dream about your process. You can dream about being the best you can be. Now you can also dream about your gold medal dance. Would you do a dance when you get out of the pool?
Probably not.
Okay. Would some of the team?
Some of them I would say would. Most of the time I think there'd be people carrying other people.
Uh-huh. Susie O'Neill wasn't much of a dancer, but she came up with a dance. So yeah. I think you could could start dreaming of the dance bronze so that when it happens I can watch and go, that was that moment on my day.
Yep.
Bron came up with the gold. So I got one more random question for you.
Yes.
Do you have an Olympic tattoo?
I do. Yeah, I do. Nope.
On your
right.
Right.
Foot. Front of foot.
Oh, there it is.
Where a thong strap would go.
Okay. And it's not coloured. Does that make a difference?
Was
that...
Well, it was a conscious choice. So I used the letter from the AOC that announced my selection. Congratulations on your selection in the Olympic team. So it had an Olympic symbol at the top. So I took that Olympic symbol, so that's the same size, and I decided to go just black, because once an Olympian, always an Olympian, and I sort of see the colours as being an active status. So technically I could have colours now, but I thought, given things, you never know after your first Olympics if you're going to continue, if you'll be selected. So I thought if I go with the bluey-black colour, it'd be something that you always have, you're always an Olympian, whether you're currently participating in sport or not.
Even when the lights go out, that will still be there. So, Bronwyn, thank you for joining us. It's been awesome. High five to you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
May the forces be with you. So we'd love to have you engaged in the podcast. Please go to the website, nataliecook.com/podcast, and enter the daily question to have a chance to win one coin a day. Of course, the Royal Australian Mint official 2020 Olympic team coin. You'll also have a chance to win one of three pairs of Ace Optics sunglasses, and the ultimate prize, one lucky listener will win the ultimate Fan Plus sports experience with one of our podcast guests. So head over to the website, nataliecook.com/podcast, and put your entry in.
I love the Olympic Games. I love what it represents. Everyone tries to be the best athlete they can be, and the best in the world at any given time.